This morning, we're going to hear from individuals who can pay him a tribute like no others can pay him a tribute, and that would be his wonderful sons. We will first hear now from Mark Abulafia, followed by Bob, and then Jeff.
My father made these letters. It's carved from a sperm whale. Salmon. I love the fish.
And I called my father the first. Whenever I caught a fish, he was the top of the list. I'd call my dad, and he'd just revel at the thought of me hauling in some 50-pound king salmon. It was wonderful. Thank you, everyone, so much for being here. Can you all hear me? Thank you for being here today and to join us in saying goodbye to our dear father. I find it hard to believe that we're just 5 months short of 40 years ago that my brother Jeffrey stood right here alongside Bob and me to eulogize my mother. Estan Ganeden. My father was my hero. He was my mentor, my confidant. He taught us the true meaning of honor, integrity, humility, and respect. Home from the Navy in 1946 and married in 48, he spent 40 years as a photo engraver, 28 of them for the Seattle Times newspaper. My father told me that one Shabbat morning he went to the old synagogue on First Street and sat next to his friend Saul Altabet. Rhonda, your father. My dad looked up into the balcony and caught my mother's eye, and he asked Saul, he said, "Saul, who's that beautiful girl sitting up there?" And Saul answered, "Sam, that's Ray Calvo." To which my dad answered, "Saul, I'm going to marry that girl." And so Saul says, "I don't know, Sam. That's Shy and Fortuna's daughter, and she just might be a bit out of your league." To that, my dad said, "Well, we'll see, Saul." And, well, we did see, and he married my mom, and Dad always told me that it was truly love at first sight. They both worked hard, made just enough money to buy a little home on 38th Avenue and raise a family. Mom and Dad never talked about it much, but we had a little sister named Marcy. She caught pneumonia in the hospital as an infant. Her prognosis was grave. Mom wanted to bring her home so she could be with our family for her final days. A few days later, Mom called Dad at work on a Friday to tell him that Marcy had taken a turn for the worse. Dad told his boss, left work early, quickly drove home, and they were together that night when she died. She was buried here on a Sunday. My father returned to work on Monday, and at the end of his shift, he picked up his check, only to find that his boss had cut his pay 2 hours for the time he missed work. Unbelievable. Dad gave his notice that day and left for a better job with the Seattle Times, one that lasted nearly 30 years. Mom was devastated, of course, but then little brother Bobby came along, and soon after, and all was right with the world. We were a simple family, but never for want. A night out for dinner was when burgers were five for a buck at Zesto's. A family outing was an afternoon of swimming at the Renton pool, or a vacation was 10 days at Sephardic youth camp on Whidbey Island. We tried taking a Disneyland trip once, but with my dad's old Chevy, but it broke down somewhere around Chico, and we ended up sleeping in the back of some old gas station down there. Did we ever make it? I don't know that we made it. I don't think we made it. Did we finally make it? Did we made it to Disneyland? Well, we'll also cherish those crazy vacations with the Calvos and, of course, the Adados on Lake Chelan. The fun we had at Lafferty's. Ralph and Marcel, Sam and Ray loved you dearly. My dad was my hero. In the winter of 1943, aboard the U.S. Coast Guard ship Plane Tree, our dad patrolled the waters of the North Pacific out of the port of Nova Scotia. Oftentimes in seas with waves as high as 30 feet, it was very difficult duty, dropping depth charges to protect the coastline from enemy submarines. The captain of his ship received news from the War Department that a German U-boat submarines were attempting to enter the St. Lawrence River. At 3 o'clock in the morning, while on deck duty, my father heard the captain's call,
Torpedo, starboard side, right full rudder, right full rudder. Dad looked off into distance, and under the light of the moon saw the bright phosphor trail of a German torpedo heading directly for their ship. As the captain had that 200-foot tender-class cutter turned in less than 30 seconds, my father watched with the rest of the crew in awe as that torpedo buzzed harmlessly past their ship within 50 yards. I asked my father what he was thinking at that moment, and he answered me, "Pal, pal," as he affectionately called us, "are you kidding me?" I had no time to think. I said the Shaman crapped my pants. I never missed an opportunity to tell my father how much I loved him and what a wonderful father he was. Everything I tell you here today is everything I forever told my father. Nothing was ever left unsaid. Honra a tu padre y a tu madre para que tus días se enlarguen sobre la tierra del mundo. Honor thy father and thy mother, that your days may be long upon this land, which the Lord thy God has given thee. Our father taught us to say the Shema at night, and Modeh Ani Lefanecha Melech Chai V'Kayam in the morning. I was proud to sit in the Kehillah with my father, grandfathers, uncles, and brothers, sing Hashkivenu and pray El Nora Lila. The melodies that today still make me feel so alive, so happy, and so close to Hashem. Because my father lives so far away in Florida, we talked often on the phone, sharing happy and sad, and sang Ladino romanzas together. His favorite was Tres Hermanicas. He called it Tres Hermanicos, for obvious good reason. Tres Hermanicos eran. Blancas de rosa y ramas de flor, tres hermanicas eran, tres hermanicas son. I talked to him just last week to wish him a happy Hanukkah Alegre, and I swear we both broke out in a song at the same time, singing Anerot Alalu together. I'm so very happy that I got to travel to Eretz Israel for the first time in my life last month. And when I returned from an absolutely life-changing journey, the first person I called was my father, to share it all with him, all of it. I said, "Dad, I got to lead our group of men out onto the Kotel like I was leading my football team out onto the gridiron. I put my face and hands against the ancient western wall. I said Hashkava for Mom and a prayer for your continued good health. As I turned back, I was filled with emotion. I felt like I had been struck by lightning and that I'd gone to heaven and come back again. Dad was so happy for me, and you know why? Because the best things in life are to be shared with the ones who care about you and who you care about the most. No man is complete without his Eshet Chayil, his woman of valor. To Florence Goldstein, we thank you for finding our father in Eretz Israel, for caring for him, honoring him, and loving him for over 30 years. Although he was far from us, which surely affected his relationship with us, especially with his grandchildren, we know that it was right. Whenever Dad and I spoke, he always ended our conversation with, "Mark, I love your mother so much. You just wouldn't believe how Florence cares for me. I am truly blessed to have found room in my heart for them both." To our stepsisters, Dee and Karen, we thank you for looking after him. And to our Ach Sheli, our special stepbrother, Dr. Shaul Dadi, for loving him, checking his pulse each time he hugged him. You surely extended his length of days. Please, I want you to listen to the words we sing as we take our father to his final resting place. Ve'urachum yekaper avon ve'lo yashchit Adonai Oshia ha'melech ya'anenu v'yom koreinu. God is merciful and forgives us and does not destroy. Hashem saves and the King answers us on the day we call. In closing, our father always taught his sons to be forever proud and to protect our family Abulafia name. We did it every day by making our father proud. Tov Shem Mi Shemen Tov. A good name is better than the finest of oil. We will forever remember our father with a strong hand and an outstretched loving arm. Beyad chazaka uvizroa netuya. Good things last but a lifetime, but a good name lasts forever. Goodbye, dear dad. You entered Gan Eden with the imperishable crown of a good name. Know that we will honor it and forever protect it. We love you always.
How do you follow that? Oh. Well, Dad, I got your nose. Hi, I'm the number three son, Bob. I just wanted to share a couple stories. My dad was the epitome of the term badass. And if you knew him, you would agree. In 1983, I had just gotten engaged to my beautiful wife of 36 years, Lynn. Her parents, Werner and Roseanne Sondheim, invited myself, Lynn, my dad, and my grandmother Fortuna to dinner. They were meeting for the first time. I picked up my dad first, then we went to pick up Lynn. The three of us were in the car, my dad in the front seat, and Lynn in the back. I was driving through an alley very slowly because there was a couple walking alongside of a cat. Yes, walking alongside of a cat. The windows were down, and as we drove by, the guy said, excuse me, asshole. My dad immediately said, stop the car, pal. He swung the door of the silver 68 Riviera open, got out and said, what did you say to my son? I'm looking in the rearview mirror at Lynn's terrified expression, and the guy starts walking backward and saying, nothing, nothing. My dad gets back in the car and says, let's go, pal. We all had an excellent meal, and Lynn and I were married 2 months later. In 1970, my family and I had returned home one evening and found that someone had broken into our house and stolen all of my brother Jeff's stereo equipment. My dad called the police, and eventually that evening, they found all the equipment hidden in the bushes just down the street. A stakeout wasn't possible because of the limited manpower. So the police left, but said to call if we saw anyone returning for the loot. My mom and dad had a clear view from their bedroom to that wooded area down the street. Sure enough, at about 2 a.m., two gentlemen started walking up the street towards the area. My dad decided to take matters into his own hands. Went outside with a toy BB gun and shouted, freeze. The two gentlemen raised their arms. My mom, still looking out the bedroom window, yelled, please don't shoot, Sam, knowing it was just a toy BB gun. One man ran, the other laid on the ground and said, please don't shoot. The police arrived and my dad showed them it was just a BB gun. Dad, I thought of these two stories because they remind me of how devoted you were to your family. You always said you would return to Seattle to be laid next to your queen. I love you, Dad. Thank you, and thank you for coming, guys.
I don't know how you follow this kind of stuff, you guys.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Isn't this just the most beautiful picture? You know, he's actually, this is cropped from a picture. He's holding you, Rachel, when you were really, really little. And he just has the most wonderful expression. That is so him. I expect to pass through this life but once. If therefore there be any kindness that I can show, or any good thing that I can do for a fellow human being, let me do it now, and not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. I want to thank everybody for coming here today to the Seattle Sephardic Chapel in solidarity with our extended family, and especially to remember our father and the full and very vigorous life that he led. I want to thank both our family and our friends that came from far away, nieces and nephews from the other side of Washington State, and of course our extended Florida family who are here in spirit. I want to thank Rabbi Frank Barron for officiating today. Our family connections, Rabbi, go so far back and are run so deep. It's a comfort to hear your wonderful voice, and the participation in this process has been very consoling to my brothers and to myself. I also want to thank you, Ike Azos. This is wonderful for us because I am caught in between the two. Mr. Azos taught me my bar mitzvah portion all those years ago, and then I taught guitar and drums to the Seattle Sephardic Surfers, a little band that Rabbi Barron was in. So now we've passed the torch. I also want to thank our wonderful wives, Lynn, Margie, and Francine. You three have been so supportive, and thank you so, so very much. We would be lost in this world without you. In looking back at my own recollections of our family history, I very quickly realized, as all of you know already, that I recall most of our family's past through photographs and the stories that they tell. So I've been looking at photographs for the past several days. I've seen many of a young man in a sailor's uniform, a worker in a leather apron with a visor, a shirtless man with a crew cut, and a push lawnmower. That's how I see my father looking back at me. Sometimes he's pretty serious, but most often just smiling with those caring eyes and an unlimited amount of love in his heart. I could always pick my father's face out in a crowd and sense his encouragement towards me to do my best. As a young boy in Seattle, my dad's family spent their summers renting a little cottage at Alki Beach. You know, back then, it took an entire day to get to Alki Beach. Dad told me these were the happiest days of his young life. He and his brothers enjoying the summer until their jeans and shoes were totally worn out. Then it was back to Chubby and Tubby to buy new jeans and shoes, and then back to school. Dad attended Garfield High School and graduated just before World War II broke out. Pearl Harbor made it very clear that America did not exist in a protected part of the world, and many young men and women, like my dad, enlisted in the armed services. Dad traded his Garfield High School cap and gown for a Coast Guard uniform, and like Mark said, was assigned to the USCG Plane Tree in the Great Lakes and then on to the South Pacific. The Plane Tree was a buoy tender and armed with a dozen or more depth charges operating around islands in the South Pacific, which names most of us wouldn't even recognize. Dad told me later on in his life that he owed his safety aboard the Plane Tree to his captain, who would typically drop all of the depth charges at once and then hightail it back to port to pick up more. Dad was one of the many young men and women whose sacrifices during the war years came to define them. They came back to the States to start their families, to build homes, and to renew their communities. They brought with them a certain toughness that years of war can bear on your continents. On returning home, who could have blamed these people, men and women, if they were to say, you know what, I've done my part, it's all up to you now for the rest of the way.
But that certainly was not the kind of person that my father was. He worked hard to become a union engraver and served an apprenticeship for over 6 years at a local engraving company. Some of my earliest moments with my father, I remember going down in the family car to pick Dad up after work. Mom would pull the Chevy into the alleyway behind the shop, and my brother Mark and I would watch the loading dock for my dad's appearance. He would jump off the loading dock and approach the car to greet us to tremendous cheering. To me, it was like seeing Tarzan swing down from the trees. I went back as an adult and found the alleyway where this engraving company was, and I realized that the loading dock was about that high. But you know how your time as a child kind of distorts time and distance. But it was like jumping off the edge of the world to me. Dad would often stay past quitting time just in case the boss at his company would need something extra done at the last minute. That was Dad's way of being recognized as a hard worker. But to me and Mark, the extra 5 or 10 minutes seemed like an eternity to wait. Once again, the distortions of your youth. As many of you know, my dad was interested in good health and exercise long before it became fashionable. It was in his early, I was in my early teens when Dad would take me down to the Metropolitan Health Studio down by the public market. There I was introduced to a whole new world of weightlifting and a new circle of friends that Dad referred to as muscleheads. My favorite was this big Romanian guy with a waxed mustache who would play the violin in between 250-pound bench presses. What a sight that was. And later in years, we went down to the Metropolitan. Dad and I took karate lessons together from a black belt karate named Sandy, who stood about that tall but was about as wide as a car. I was always proud of my dad because he just looked so darn healthy and fit. And many of you here today learned the benefits of weight training from my old man. His specialty was the Zitman curl. I'm going to try and do this to you for you. Let me show you what this is like. I've been practicing. It went kind of like this. Of course, Dad had 50-pound dumbbells in each hand. I can barely do it without. If you have time, check Sam Abbo Does the Zitman Curl. It's one of our favorite YouTube weight training videos, and I think you can still find it. Was he 86 or 80? He was 80-plus years old when he recorded that video. I also want to thank our cousin Joe, who yesterday made a wonderful Facebook post where he went to the gym to exercise and remember his Uncle Sam. Thank you so much, Joseph. One of the many videos that I have is a copy of an 8mm film that Mom and Dad took on their honeymoon. I have watched this a ton of times. My favorite part is this short little segment that my newlywed parents staged by a sign that says, "Welcome to California." Ray has this huge smile on her face, and she's actually jumping up and down and clapping her hands. Although she's only 19, she was just filled with joy in the anticipation of a new life together as husband and wife. Sam, ever so cool, dressed in slacks and a shirt and tie, he's just so confident and self-assured. I've seen it in my head over and over so many times. They just adored one another. Being descended from a long line of musically competent Calvos, my mother and father always encouraged me to play an instrument. Then my music career started at the age of 5. Although I was given expensive piano lessons for a little over 2 years, I soon became known in the entertainment circles. I became known as a musical washout. My brother Mark met a similar fate with a guitar several years later. But as luck would have it, I became rather fascinated by the guitar and started playing the abandoned 6-string that Mark left behind. It was my father that convinced Mom that I showed at least some promise and was able to get some lessons. At age 12, I started playing guitar, and Mom, and especially my dad, became two of my biggest fans and promoters. It was just last September that Dad booked a show for me at the Brookdale Retirement Home in Boynton Beach and asked that I send him a list of 10 songs to perform for his approval prior to the event. He moved one of my favorite songs off the list and substituted one of his favorite Neil Diamond songs and ordered me to play it. Such a promoter, that guy. Dad was always very artistic and loved to carve things. Starting out with driftwood and soapstone, Dad was soon working on larger and more complicated pieces. He did a Native American-style ceremonial canoe paddle that was posted at Graham Hill Elementary School and carved the front doors of a synagogue in Florida. He seemed to be able to do it all. Dad soon moved on to carving ivory. He made a huge purchase of whale ivory and carving tools when I was in high school without telling my mother, who didn't speak to him for almost a month. He became very accomplished and very fast at carving traditional Native Alaskan pieces that they called billikens, and he sold all that the downtown broker could get his hands on, and they shipped them to Alaska as if to be carved by authentic Alaska natives. Dad would mark each one with a small triangle. On a cruise trip to Alaska, Mom and Dad saw a lot of his pieces with the triangle mark for sale in shops in Anchorage and Juneau as passed off as authentic. Surprised by how much the retail price for these things were, Dad inquired about them, and the shop owner told him, "Sir, you just don't seem to know how long it takes an Eskimo to carve one of these things." Well, of course, Dad didn't tell him that he had carved the piece in a Seattle basement in less than 10 minutes. Mom and Dad would take us on vacations during summer at the Bayshore Inn in Vancouver, British Columbia, where we would stay sometimes over a week and go swimming in the pool, touring the cities, having meals at the nice restaurants in the hotel. I knew we were living well beyond our means, but Dad would pull a shoebox filled with ivory carvings out of the back of the Chevy on our departure, and he would go over to the jewelry store where he had a contact there. This woman would buy all his ivory pieces and credit that on the bill. And Dad would walk back to the car like this. I recall so vividly the night my dad phoned me to tell me that our mother had passed away. She was only 53. And she fought so bravely against the breast cancer that would take her away from us. Dad was shattered, and I can only describe this period in his life that followed as it was almost 10 years of aimless wandering. He would call me up to tell me about some nice woman that he was dating, but I knew he just wasn't very happy at all. He did a bit of traveling and had some plans to be a tour guide. He was talking about being a tour guide in Africa. He was going to be a museum tour guide. He was going to be a tour guide at Disneyland. And I got pretty used to shrugging all this stuff off. So when he announced that he was joining the Israeli army, I said, "Sure, Dad, have a great time." Well, as the story goes, Sam Abulafia did do a six-month tour as a non-combat soldier in the Israeli desert. About a month into his tour, I get a long-distance phone call from my dad. He's describing a woman that he met in the base cafeteria. He talked about this beautiful smile and this attractive woman full of life, and frankly, Dad didn't know what to do. Talk about a reversal of roles. My confident, self-assured father is asking me about dating advice. So I said, "Dad, please, just be yourself and go talk to the lady." That woman was Florence Goldstein. And she and my father were married in my backyard almost a year later. I truly believe that the happiness that they found together in Florida added decades of good health and happiness to his life. You know, we'll all remember Sam in our own special way, as a father, as an uncle, as a grandfather, as a son-in-law, as a music promoter, as a health guru, ivory and wood carver, muscle head, handyman, and so much more. So please remember all the good and helpful things that he did for us and the healthy inspiration he was to us all. Thank you so much.
As I said, beautiful words that only children can speak of a parent. We are in the throes of one of the most telling books of the Bible from the months of October, November, and December in synagogues across the world, the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Torah, of the five books of Moses, is read publicly. And if you, even if you don't have a critical eye when you read the Bible, you can't help but notice that throughout the book of Genesis is story after story, narrative after narrative, of brothers not getting along. Cain and Abel. I don't need to tell you what happened there. Abraham left his father's home to pursue more lofty goals, believing in monotheism and one God. He had a couple of sons, Isaac and Ishmael. I don't have to tell you what happened between those two brothers. Isaac had two sons, twins, Jacob and Esau, Yaakov and Esav. They didn't get along very well. Jacob had sons, 12 of them. Joseph was one of them, a favorite of Jacob. His brothers didn't like that. And I don't have to tell you what happened to Joseph. Sold into slavery from beneath their own father's eyes into Egypt, ultimately becoming the viceroy, second in command only to the Pharaoh of Egypt. So this beautiful book of Genesis speaks of great familial dysfunctionality. And you have to ask, what is behind all this? Well, one answer comes to mind: how truthful our history is, how truthful and how human and how genuine, even when the information isn't all that flattering, comes to the surface, we still say that was our history. And like each and every one of us, we have our problems, we have our challenges. But even more so, I think it underscores that the Torah, that the Bible, is not a myth. It was with real human beings that had troubles and reconciled and made peace, and everything eventually worked out. So why am I telling you all this? Because I think the man for whom we've come to honor and memorialize was the salt of the earth. He was who you saw. He didn't have airs about him. He was strong-natured. He exuded warmth, loving kindness. He had a kind countenance. Despite that story, Bob, that you just told me about in the alley, that he was one tough guy, but it was a protective kind of toughness. He was good-natured. He was a devoted father, a devoted husband, loved his Sephardic heritage, loved his Sephardic community, loved his friends. He was centered. He was balanced. He didn't live in conflict. And he was extremely generous with compliments. That is not so easy to do, and be sincere about them. You know, when you received a compliment from Sam Abulafia, and I'm some years his junior, and I'm maybe don't want to say this just because I wanted to believe what he said he meant when he complimented me on something, but you knew it was sincere. You knew he had integrity. You knew he wasn't just trying to whitewash or get something from you. No ulterior motive. He was a kind soul. He had a great sense of justice, of what is right and what is wrong. On a personal note, when Bob called me a couple of days ago and told me of the sad news of the passing of his father, we began to reminisce about just the history of us, of our community. And I said, Bob, you know, when you think about it, we go way back with so many connections with our mutual families. And then I began to ponder further. And with each one of his sons, his good sons, I had not only a collective good relationship with Bob, Mark, and Dr. Jeff, but I had a personal, individual relationship with each one of them, independent of the other. As Jeff mentioned earlier, he taught us, we had a musical group when we were kids, and Jeff was the hired professional to make sure we were on the straight and narrow. I did play the drums, and Jeff, we'd meet with him once a week, and he would be our music coach, and great times. And I will forever remember your kindness and your good nature. Mark, you mentioned camp. That's probably where we began being such good friends. You were my counselor at camp. So responsible was he. Nowadays, if you put I don't know how old you were then, perhaps 15, 16 years old, I don't know. To now, if you put a 15 or 16-year-old in charge of children at a camp, a sleepaway camp, you know, you're going to wonder as a parent, I hope he keeps a good eye or she keeps a good eye on our children. You were so responsible, so kind, and so instructive. You can't help but remember those days. And of course, Bob, you and Lynn, very dear to Rena and I, and our families. Our families go back. I've always said this, not to be prejudicial or not at the disparagement of any or the exclusion of any of our beautiful Sephardic families in our community, but I've always said, maybe you've heard me say it in the past, the Abulafia family, Condiati families, Mezzestrano families, and the Varin families all hail from the same city in Turkey. So we have, I think, some similarities. We have a meeting of the minds, and I like to think we all have the same, I hope we have this brotherly love that stays with us forever. And your grandmother, Malkuna, may she rest in peace, was a Varin. But I don't know that we were related, but Varin was a big name, a large name in Turkey, just as the Abulafias and the others were, but likely we were in some way. There's, in our age of social media, it's so easy to read or see something online and believe it. You very difficult to discern between that which is fact and that which is opinion. Similarly, even days that predated social media, Twitter and Facebook, just is relatively new. Just in social settings, it was difficult decades ago, maybe even further back, to discern between conventional pop culture and what is right and what is just. In a man like Sam Abulafia, I don't believe any of those mediums could have affected how he behaved, because he had such conviction in what was up and what was down, what was right and what was left. His compass was always intact. I will close with some words that I want to say to his wonderful sons that reflect who you are from your dear parents and grandparents from whom you come. But especially your mother, Ray, of blessed memory, and your father, Sam, now of blessed memory, is that each of us do not need to look any further to recall or to get a glimpse into the lives of Sam and Ray Abulafia. You don't have to look any further than into the character, than into the essence and integrity of their three sons and their extended families, because you are the, tu que viva muchos años, you are the living legacies of your parents, which is why we do Mildados, I believe, year after year, because it's a statement of remembering your parents, and it's your opportunity to continue the life values that they instilled in each of you and into your children and grandchildren. Looking at you, knowing you, is knowing Sam and Ray Abulafia, because you are the result of them and of all of their efforts. And besides being friends, you are brothers who are kind and good to each other, and who are, I can see it, I can feel it. And you are, you come from great stock, and value it, cherish it. And I know each of us wishes to each of you individually and collectively that the blessings of the memory of your father and mother should always be with you forever. Tehei nishmatam tzirura b'yitzhurachayim b'gan eden. Amen.